Well, good afternoon and welcome everyone to today's event from Euractiv's headquarters here at the very heart of the European Quarter in Brussels. My name is Anna Gumbau. I am a climate and energy journalist and event moderator, and I'm delighted to be moderating today's discussion under the title Securing Water for Tomorrow: What Course Should the EU Take? This event is organized by Euractiv and supported by Coca-Cola. I don't think I'm going to be stating anything that nobody knows here, but water is essential to human life, to the health of our ecosystems, and also to European economies. But the overexploitation, the rising demand, and most importantly, the effects of climate change are putting a lot of pressure into our ecosystems, and our societies are already facing this impact. Since the year 2000, the European Commission's Water Framework Directive has been the main legal framework for water protection in Europe, aiming to ensure an integrated approach to water management. And more recently, in the last year, the European Commission was drafting a water resilience initiative that for the moment has been withdrawn from the Commission's agenda. Now, this event comes just 2 days before the World Water Day, so hardly a better moment to be discussing the current situation, particularly after a lot of regions in Europe are facing pressure also from droughts, and we're thinking from the Danube Basin to the Mediterranean coastline. I'll be introducing our speakers very shortly, but before that, just a couple of things to keep in mind. If you want to tweet or share across social media anything that we discuss here with our panel, please use the hashtag EADebates. And we will have time for questions and answers as well. You will see on your screens coming in shortly the Slido code. You can either use this QR code or connect to slido.com and use the hashtag water to input any questions. This event is being held in hybrid mode, so welcome to all of you joining us online, but welcome also to the many of you joining us in person here in Brussels. We have a full room here at Euractiv's headquarters. So without further ado, I'm introducing our speakers. We have with us the Director for Quality of Life at the European Commission's Directorate General for Environment, Veronica Manfredi. Welcome. Joining us online is the member of the European Parliament at its Environment Committee and also a member of the European Parliament's Water Group, Ms. Pernille Weiss. Welcome. Also with us is the President of the Consultative Commission on Industrial Change at the European Economic and Social Committee, Mr. Pietro Di Lotto. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Next up with us is the Regional CEO at WWF Central and Eastern Europe, Andreas Beckmann. Welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure.
And last but definitely not the least is the Vice President for Sustainability and Public Policy of Coca-Cola in Europe, Wouter Vermeulen. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be here. Mm-hmm.
So I would like to start by taking stock of the current policies that we have at the moment, and also in the past 5 years. The European Green Deal has been taken prominent stage, and it's clear that there's a strong connection between the resilience of our water ecosystems, the effects of climate change, and our biodiversity. So I think it would be great to be taking stock on the different policies when it comes to water management and in this increased pressure that several of our ecosystems across Europe have been facing. Maybe we could start with Veronica Manfredi. I think it would be great to understand from you the connections between the European Green Deal and how has it been addressing water management in many ways. What can you tell us about that?
Thank you for the question. Well, first of all, I think that it's important that we focus not just on the blue water, but on the green water. We tend to forget that soils, forests are our water banks. I think we've all been going through primary school cycles where the water cycle has been explained to us, but we tend to forget that unless the soil absorption is there and the capacity of vegetation as such is preserved to absorb, our groundwater replenishment suffers a lot. You said yourself in your introduction, of course, we have the Water Framework Directive in place since 2000, but it is fair to say that we continue to observe to this date a very poor implementation of this directive in certain parts. For example, with over-abstraction from groundwaters, mismanagement of the waters, lack of water efficiency in so many areas of our activities, from the built environment to industrial activities and so on. And under this mandate, what has been really important to achieve is, amongst other, a really important deal on the Industrial Emission Directive that now makes water efficiency a binding requirement among the best available technologies to be achieved by the largest industrial actors of the European Union, but also, of course, all what we have done on the Fit for 55 to enhance efficiency in the consumption of energy that always comes with the reduction also of water. But I think there is scope to do much more to enhance this water and energy nexus. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Veronica Manfredi. I would like now to bring in with us Pernille Weiss. Do you think that we could have that we could do much more, or that the scope of what could be done is even more than what we are doing at the moment? What can you tell us?
Yes, I will try, and thank you for allowing me to be with you online. I agree to a very large extent to what Manfredi just said. But from my point of view, also as being a member of the European Parliament and observing the way the Water Framework Directive was announced and worked on so far, I also do agree that we have an issue regarding implementation of the directive. And therefore, sometimes when we look at the situation on water, we have an arising awareness of the stress on water that Europe and the globe is facing. We have droughts, we have flooding, but there is a missing understanding of the way then to use the toolboxes that are already in our hands when it comes to existing legal frameworks like the Water Framework Directive, as well as also the other legal instruments in the European Union. That then tells me and also tell a lot of other people, stakeholders in Europe, that we need to call for a more systematic and holistic approach to the water-stressed Europe, pointing out where there are already tools that could be used much better, either in implementation or enforcement, but also to help stakeholders to find each other in order to work with the stress that not only is a matter on the environmental impact of the water stressness, but also the impact that the water stress has on our society as a whole, and on our economy. I have understood that the Water Resilience Initiative that was supposed to come from the Commission, also on a strong call from the European Economic and Social Committee, as well as many colleagues and the Committee of Regions in EU, was withdrawn and postponed in the Commission because of some kind of anxiety that was just would fuel more critique because of not so well communicated guidance of how to understand that working on water is not putting more pressure on farmers or more pressure on smaller and medium-sized companies. Instead, it was better to communicate that it is actually the Water Resilience Initiative's purpose to ease the stress that farmers and many industries and SMEs are facing going forward with the water-stressed Europe. So yes, we do have a lot of things we could do, but first and foremost, we could do better with the tools we already have at hand and an EU Blue Deal, a more systematic and holistic approach to water would be very much acquired.
Thank you very much, MEP Weiss. I take two big ideas from here. First, the question of implementation, and also the tools that we already have in our disposal. And taking this holistic approach, we will be discussing these questions in our debate in the next hour or so. Now, I would like to bring in Mr. Pietro Dell'Otto. How do you assess in the current policies? Do you agree with the assessment of that our panelists so far have been saying?
So, well, let me start by saying that we deeply acknowledge the efforts and all the work done by the Commission with the directive, because it's so good, so good. But what we think is the necessity to go beyond and further. To go beyond, what I mean? When we called, we started 1 year and a half ago with the European Parliament, with Pernille. We closely worked in order to manage or to prepare a package, a legislative package, as a starting process, a starting point of a long-term process in order to have a comprehensive policy. Because we truly believe that water has not just an environmental aspect or value. Of course, it has. But we have to consider all the other aspects. And for this reason, we called this comprehensive policy EU Blue Deal as a motto in order to have a cross-cutting policy, a standalone policy, not included in a silo, as a part of a broader, just or mainly environmental policy oriented, but an absolutely horizontal policy. That's what we need for industries, for farmers, the main actors consuming water, and also, of course, infrastructure and households and so on. Because we consider the approach for water or for a water policy in a positive way. Because farmers consuming 70% of industry, consuming more than 30%, are not part of the problem, are part of the solution. And we have to create a broad horizontal framework in order to help them, these main actors, to be more water sustainable.
Definitely. Thank you. Thank you very much. We will be discussing indeed in detail to see how exactly the different sectors are also part of the solution to the ongoing situation. I would like to bring now to the discussion Andreas Beckmann from WWF. How do you see the current situations and the toolbox that we have at the moment to tackle this situation?
I'm going to probably support or repeat or follow on a lot of the things that have been said, including starting with Ms. Manfredi. But if we could just take a step back, and Ms. Manfredi alluded to this. I mean, what is the basic problem? And that, I think, is fundamentally that we need to work with nature rather than against it. The ecosystem aspects of this is key. I think a good example we have in Hungary, where right now the country is literally drying out. We've got more water is leaving the country than coming in. And that, of course, has impacts on groundwater levels, soil moisture. In 2022, when we had the droughts, we had decreases in agriculture production of up to 90% in some parts of the country. Where does that come from? It's partly climate change that's increasing the extremes of water, but it's especially the result of decades of, could say, mismanagement or poor management of our natural resources. We have been straightening our rivers, these meandering rivers, we've been straightening them so that basically shunts the water off out of the country as quickly as possible, building up dikes to make it even more quick, and then cutting them off from the floodplains. And as a result, less water actually stays in the landscape and is able to recharge the water, the moisture in the soils and into the groundwater. You know, so that's there's lots of problems. Of course, it's a very complex problem. But that is the basic problem. And so then the question is, you know, what kind of policy tools do we have? I think with the Water Framework Directive, we have the basic tools, but it's not being properly implemented and enforced. And that's where we need to make progress. And I'm sure we'll get into that.
Thank you very much, Andreas. And last but not least, Wouter Vermeulen with Coca-Cola Europe. What can you tell us about the different state of policies and also then from Coca-Cola's perspective, what do you think is needed in terms of water stewardship and in terms of the different toolboxes?
Sure, and thanks for that question. I think, you know, enabling policy frameworks are important, but obviously I think it's also important for private sector companies to first demonstrate how they take meaningful initiatives to address the interlinked challenge of nature degradation, freshwater crisis, and climate change. And You know, we have seen the report from the European Environment Agency from like 10 days ago, warning that actually Europe is unprepared for climate change, even under a 1.5 degree trajectory. And, you know, the pressure on ecosystems was called out there. And I think it won't surprise anyone here if I say that water is a material issue for a beverage company like ours. So, you know, we were the first company actually to come out with a goal to replenish the water that we use in our finished beverages. We announced that in 2007. We met that goal in 2015, 5 years ahead of target, and we have maintained it until now. Like in 2022, we replenished 159% of the water used in our finished beverages. And one of the ways in which we do that is actually to promote regenerative water use in our bottling facilities from our colleagues from CCP and Hellenic. So maybe that is one concept that we can discuss a little bit further, is regenerative water use and circular economy for water at watershed level, right? And then I think the other question is, how do we scale up solutions? And I would point to two things. First of all, partnerships with unusual bedfellows. So together with WWF, we have been investing with the Coca-Cola Foundation in the restoration of the Living Danube for many years. And we can give a few examples of how that has tangibly and meaningfully improved nature, brought biodiversity back, but also actually got the support from farmers and local communities. So actually, that's the pitch I want to make today, is the good thing with nature is it can be restored, progress can be made, and you can get the local communities along. So taking meaningful initiatives as a private sector company, working in partnership with others, and yes, then there are enabling policy frameworks that help scale up those solutions. But implementation has been referenced. Let's not forget that apparently until today, 23% of water is actually leaking away, right, in public infrastructure. So as we look at this very important problem, I think, you know, and the Water Framework Directive is in place, but more can be done to actually also, pun intended, plug that hole in the problem that we have.
Thank you very much. Now, then as a follow-up question, because I've seen that this has appeared already a few times, and I think that's a question that that the audience really wants to know, which is on the question of the Water Resilience Initiative. I think it would be great to start hearing from Veronica to understand, you know, the reasoning why it has been withdrawn in a particularly also important context and situation and urgency in many parts of Europe as well. And what can then be the course of action, if it's probably something left for the next commission? But maybe a few words on that.
I have an easy life here because the line to take is now really official. I don't know whether you have noticed that both the climate risk assessment communication, the one that announces actions in order to become better prepared in response to the EA report, and the recently adopted midterm review of the 8 Environmental Action Programme, actually point to the fact that the Commission is finalizing its overarching assessment of river basin management plan, flood risk management plans, marine programs of measures to come up with a granular state of fresh waters and to some extent of seas assessment, and to build therefore really more granularly on what we are seeing coming out from the national experiences and consider then the need for further action. I cannot replace my political mastery in giving you all the granular reasons of what has been certainly also a political opportunity, decision to go for a temporary postponement. I saw the word withdrawal used here and there. I wouldn't agree with that word, because I can tell you that we continue to feel strong support to work very hard. And actually, we are working very hard on this water topic, which I think is unanimously recognized, certainly inside our institution, and we are very sensitive to the calls that are coming from the other institution as a super important topic for the future, well beyond the environmental sphere. I mean, the determinant, I would say, for getting the green and digital transition right. I stress the digital as well here, which comes with quite some water implication as well. So the work is going ahead, and I would say the next rendezvous indeed will be already the Green Week 29th and 30th of May, colleagues, please all stay united. The entire Green Week is devoted to the water resilience topic this year. As you know, it's one of the major mm-hmm. events in our, let's say, green affair, but you will see really embracing and bringing to the fore a lot of high-level speakers from different parts for assessing different implications of water stress. We are going to launch a wide EU awareness-raising campaign. And I must say, here again, allow me to say that I've seen other policy files where actually starting by raising the awareness can be the complete game-changing factor. The file that comes to mind is the Single-Use Plastic Directive, where I'm convinced that had the Commission not engaged proactively and for some months into a very wide awareness-raising campaign about what plastic pollution was meaning for our seas, for our rivers, we would have not got, in the space of 6 months, the adoption by the Parliament and the Council of a groundbreaking Single-Use Plastic Directive. So in a way, maybe there is merit in having this revamped course of action. And as I said, June, July, I hope the State of the Water report and then plenty of other things. This is actually the water year, I must say, also internationally. Already on the 18th of May, we have the World Water Forum in Bali that will see us very much present. And you may have noticed that President Macron, together with the President of Kazakhstan, are calling for a specific One Water Summit at the margins of this year's United Nations General Assembly. So this will take place in September. And we have the United Nations Oceans Conference waiting for us in June 2025. I expect a lot of blue coming our way throughout the months and years ahead. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you, Veronica. Then maybe for the rest of the panelists, and I will use the word that that she specifically used, the postponement of this initiative. Which impact do you think it's going to have in practice in the EU's water strategy? Is it something that has worried you as well? What can you tell me? Yes, Andreas.
So very encouraged by what Ms. Manfredi said. My organization has been very concerned about the pause, and I've been afraid that means that we take the foot off the accelerator, especially as you mentioned, the European Environmental Agency's climate risk assessment came out, and it's scary reading. It's very sobering, and then the communication that came out right after that from the Commission was tepid, I would say, water was identified as one of the key urgent risks by the EA study, and there was only one stocktake basically mentioned there, so that's raised the alarm bells on our part. We need to push on the accelerator for this. WF has been asking for a climate and water resilience law that would push this forward. As we mentioned, we have the legislation in place. We've got the Water Framework Directive. It is holistic. It is pioneering. It is far-reaching. It's been repeatedly by the EEA, also by the fitness check 2 years, 4 years ago now, has been identified as fit for purpose. It is what we need. We just need to implement it. We just need to enforce it. So we have that, and we need then to push that forward, with a climate resilience law or water resilience law, or hopefully then the initiative by the Commission. So thank you, and we'll hold you to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Andreas. Walter?
Well, indeed, I would echo Andreas' comments, and maybe it's like, as they say in French, reculer pour mieux sauter. So indeed, to take a little bit more time, to prepare even better. I just wanted to bring in also the consumer perspective, because obviously we are a consumer-centric business, and all of our research, and also research like from Globescan, which is a sustainability consultancy, just highlights how important it is for people across Europe, water stewardship, nature restoration. I think it's also a helpful entry point to bring people into the broader environmental debate, because, climate and climate change is very technocratic, right? Carbon sequestration, carbon storage, nature and water, it's around the corner. It's in your neighborhood. You can relate to it. So I think one of the key things that we will have to do, I think also into the next mandate, is actually to positivize, the narrative on nature protection, on climate change, bring society along, point to the positives. And I know that, you know, also in our company and in the broader debates on sustainability, we very often look at trade-offs, the choices to be made. But what I'm inspired by, also through the work that we do with WWF on the Living Danube, is actually co-benefits. You know, and we have worked with a third party to actually develop a methodology to better capture the co-benefits of water replenishment. Those programs help water quality, flood protection, biodiversity, even tourism. So my call would be, as we go into that next framework and next discussion, to also look at how do we capture the co-benefits and how do we collectively change the narrative so that we bring society along, including farmers.
Thank you. Would MEP Weiss, is there something you would like to add into this to this question, or anything you'd like to respond?
Yes, please. And I will promise to be a little shorter than the first round. I really hate to be not in the room with you, but I will do my best. I will just add to the conversation about, is it a good idea that the water initiative is postponed? I think not. I appreciate very much that Mrs. Manfredi is explaining, defending also the good arguments that can be by digging deeper into the content and prepare much better for a conversation. But the timing is wrong, because the water stress in Europe is so clear to everybody, and we have an European election where a lot of candidates could, on the basis also of having the Water Resilience Initiative as a part of the conversation, a more enriched and a more structured dialogue with voters, and also in order to prepare the next parliament with politicians who have been a part of the conversation that was planned to happen from this spring until September in the original planning. So I think, let's see how it will work in the future, but I think we should not miss out the opportunity to have a more structured debate also in the European election campaign, also knowing that in 2024 there is a lot of national elections also happening around in the EU member states. So the matter of fact that the Commission is holding back what could be a part of a transparent and evidence-based conversation. We miss that opportunity now in this very important spring and pre-summer because of the election campaign. And for that, I think we also put some stress to our democracy, because by that the conversation will be a little bit too much fostered by anxiety or doubts or speculations, and will only give us the impression of a European Union where water is still being dealt with in a fragmented way that fosters frustration. And we really don't need that right now in European history. So for that, it would have been better if the initiative was out now. It could have been in the draft, saying, okay, we need still 80% of it to be polished, but we put it out now so that we can have an open conversation where also the co-legislators, as the European Parliament, could have taken more actively part in that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any response to this point? Mr. Dell'Otto. Yes.
Yeah. When three institutions representing three different part, crucial part, the politics, regional and local authorities, and all the other social parties and civil organized civil society at European level ask the same things all together, pushing not just Commission, but also national governments, the Council, to go further. It means that we have the necessity, the real necessity, to act now. Why? After 2 years of severe drought, floods, very few countries adopted a national strategy for water. Very few. Very few national member states had a special envoy for water. Very few. In Europe, in 2024, we have up to 50% in Europe, not in a remote country on the other side of the world. Up to 30% of water lost in pipelines in 2024. So when we asked to go further and to go in a very absolutely strong, in a strong manner, in the direction to build a water resilient society, we mean that we need a set of instruments. But now, with a comprehensive policy, as we said with a standalone policy, we have a messy situation in Europe about competencies. Of course, the framework of European level, national, regional, local, basing, energy, authorities, overlapping, fighting each other, is completely, absolutely a bizarre situation. When we called to have a blue transition fund, to collect, to make a sort of an umbrella in order to finance privately or publicly investment on water, we had, in a provocative way, the word conditionality. We need to put the word, so unfair, so uneasy, word conditionality, because we need to achieve target, but in a positive way. When we have to talk about pricing, we do not call another bureaucratic form of managing water prices, tariffs, and so on. But we need to be aware that we have so bizarre situation about permissions, concessions, jungle. We are in a jungle. But, and I conclude this round, because it's true. And we, for example, we work at a consensus basis. It means that employers, companies, employees, environmentalists, consumers agreed on every single wording we used, every single comma. So it means that all the civil society in Europe agreed on this text. Asking the same thing. And when we have to have a real role at European level as accelerator of a virtuous process, or not overcoming national competencies, but to help national bodies in order to go in this direction. And this is the most important thing.
Thank you very much. Before I move forward with the discussion and ask for any additional reactions, just to remind everyone in the audience that you're able to ask questions to our panelists. You're going to have the hashtag, the QR code coming in the screen, and you can also connect via slido.com and use the hashtag water. This also goes, by the way, for the members of the audience joining us live here in Brussels. Now, responding to that, I don't know if there are any additional reactions. Yes, Andreas, and I think Veronica Manfred is also nodding. So, yeah, please.
Just to pick up on what was said, no question that we've got issues of leakage and so on, and that needs to be addressed. But I think we need to make sure that we keep the eye on the ball and that the really big issues. Going back to my example of Hungary drying out, it's not drying out because of leakage of pipes. Clearly an issue. But it's drying out because of the loss of ecosystems and the drying out physically of the land. And so that's what we need to address. I'm very glad that Wouter mentioned some of the ecosystems, the habitats, or the virtues of that. I mean, it's a virtuous circle. It's not just co-benefits, but actually a virtuous circle that we can get into and flip it around from the negative one that we're in right now.
And I think the other thing is that we have to, and I hope we get to it still, is in terms of the actual implementation. So one thing is legislation, but then also getting into the actual implementation and what are the challenges of that.
Definitely, yes. I'll get this as our next question, but first I'd like to get a response from Veronica Manfredi.
Off-the-cuff reaction, because as you can imagine, for me, in the position where I am and where I operate and the type of colleagues that I have behind me that are all united under this border resilience agenda, all what I hear is music. But the reality is that just a few days ago, some of the largest industrial players of the EU have launched an Antwerp declaration. And I invite you to spot the word water there. You will not find it. Mm-hmm. So we are about to vote on the nature restoration law. I think it's fair to say that we didn't see that overwhelming support we would have hoped to see, since this is a major instrument to secure that we go towards that green water storage that is indispensable to repair the broken water cycle. So there is still, I find, a bit of controversy and contradiction in the way we move. I think the European Parliament was exactly on the same date the seat of a major debate on nature restoration law, which was extremely divisive, and in another room, the seat of a major plenary debate on water, where everyone was allied. I think that we are not connecting the dots. Mm-hmm. So in a way, if this additional time is a time for all of us to reunite and understand that we really need to look at things holistically and support the correct adoption and then consequent uptake and implementation of all the different dots we need to connect, I think it's already a very, very big step forward. And let's face it, this topic has been on our agendas for long. There is a lot of material already now available to make lot of noise about water. And I am dreaming since years to see water becoming more of a political topic nationally, internationally, and certainly now European. And I think, if anything, the Water Resilience Initiative debate and saga has had this benefit, mm-hmm. to raise the stake. And I really hope that indeed, even if we didn't come up as European Commission right now with a little piece of paper, colleagues feel that there is enough to be talked about from the pollution angle, the quantity angle, and of course we are always ready to dive deeper with all of you to secure that this topic is in our electoral debates already now. There is no shortage of materials. Please allow me to stress how much we see quality and quantity united. Sometimes I have the impression when I speak to some interlocutors, water resilience seems to only mean quantity, availability, mm-hmm. which is clearly the main concern also for a beverage company like you. But unless you get the quality that you need in the quality that you need, we're really not off. And I think there has been no shortage of news in the last months as well on PFAS debate, to mention just one, and so many others. So. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Walter. Yes.
I fully agree that we need to address quantity and quality. Obviously, that's for us of paramount importance. And then secondly, I do get a point on the need to continue to have the debate, raise awareness. I mean, the private sector is not one entity either. So I just want to point to actually a joint letter, urging the Commission to come forward with its water resilience strategy like a week or two ago, which was co-signed by AmCham Europe and Copacabana, right? Mm-hmm. So there you have it. But again, you know, we stand ready to support. We supported the nature restoration legislation, and I think many other colleagues within the industry will join you on the journey. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. And then perhaps as a follow-up question, because we've been discussing a lot on the tools that we could have or that we don't have yet, but let's talk about the tools that we already have. I think the question of implementation has come up consistently already across the panel. I'm curious to understand what are the main obstacles in practice for the implementation of the Water Framework Directive. Since you already mentioned that, Andreas, maybe you can get us started in this discussion. Yeah,
not surprisingly, I'll focus especially on ecosystems and habitat restoration. And just to second, I mean, I think you're right. There is a challenge for us and a need for us to go out and also to explain and to raise awareness. And that's one of the things Walter mentioned, you know, strange bedfellows, perhaps, us teaming up with Coca-Cola. Some of my colleagues are looking at us a bit strangely. But it's exactly, I think, the kind of partnerships that we need, because Coca-Cola can bring across to companies much more persuasively than we can why water is important for them directly and indirectly. It's, their business literally depends on it, and that's why we need action together. But just to talk about the implementation, I mean, and maybe Hungary is a good example again. I brought that up before. The situation is so bad there, you know, that there are the government and the authorities are seriously looking for ways to address the situation. We've been streaming in the wilds for many years. They're now listening. There's two directions. One that can be taken. One is to build up dikes, is to basically create reservoirs, you know, it's kind of gray infrastructure measures, hard infrastructure, spend a lot of money. That is maybe short-term going to help the problem, but long-term it's just going to make the problem worse. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have, unfortunately, now we've been able to work with the authorities in the Upper Tisza region, which is in the northeastern part of Hungary, and test taking down some of the dikes, opening the dikes, flooding some of the, allowing the annual floods to come in and to re-wet the agricultural lands. It's too early to say whether it'll be successful, you know, but we're talking up to tens of thousands of hectares that mm-hmm. could be restored in this way. One of the problems that we have, of course, is, and you get into the vagaries of EU policy, that the common agricultural policy was supporting payments, or wasn't supporting payments for flooded land. So we had to work with the authorities to actually change that so that farmers would actually get compensation for having their land flooded mm-hmm. in their own interest, but also in the public interest. Mm-hmm. You know, so it takes the policy at the higher level, but then you actually have to bring it down. And we need to get the water working together with the infrastructure, working together with the agriculture, in this case, the agriculture payments, and so on. So an integrated, mm-hmm. holistic approach mm-hmm. has been mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any additional reactions and responses into the question of implementation and its main challenges? Yes.
Some questions, maybe.
Oh, I see Pernille Weiss.
Yes, I just wanted to tell you about this morning. I had a long event on water in the European Parliament with stakeholders coming from different countries, and we exactly talked about this implementation or lack of implementation. And what came up in the conversation is the issues regarding governance and also about who owns the responsibility for water in the water cycle, in the ecosystem. We have the municipalities, the local level, we have the regional level, depending on which how big the country is, we have the national level, and then of course also the EU level. So there is a lot of stakeholders who somehow have a part of the responsibility, but it's unclear who really has it at a point of the water cycle. So maybe it could be relevant to start there also in investigating the clarity of the water framework directive in the EU climate law from 2020. There is actually a wonderful paragraph asking for or suggesting, almost demanding, that there should be sector-specific climate partnerships created to address climate law implementation. And that could then be the opportunity or the platform where stakeholders from industry, from research, from the relevant legal political entity sit down together and address issues regarding responsibility. That was one thing on implementation. Another part to the conversation on implementation is also this, who owns the responsibility as a consumer in the water cycle? There is also an abstract landscape on who is actually the consumer and who is the consumer who has to pay for the use of water. We also need to put that into the conversation, and that could be a part of the conversation we could have this this spring in the EU election campaign, that we have countries where the payment on water is different than in other countries. And this asymmetry on incentives also that can address how to change habits, change the use of water would be very relevant to include also when addressing implementation of existing regulations.
Thank you very much. I can allow maybe one final reaction before I move to the Q&A.
On this?
Yes.
Yeah. When you talk, when we talk about the late implementation, I follow Pernille. Because when we stress endorsing the position of the Commission, just to be clear, that we need to have a river basin management, planning and management. This is the principle, and it's not the case nowadays. It's not the case, including underground water. Because now we have absolutely, as we referred earlier, a very strange situation in Europe, in our countries. But I think this is the most important thing. But we have, I would like to add another point, because of the lack of this spread competencies bring another crucial point. The lack of reliable data, set of institutional reliable data on water. We had a lot of data, but we do not have a real, reliable, credible set of data. In many, many areas, in many, many sectors, in many, many countries, we have no meter. No meter, no measurement. Mm-hmm. No measurement. How is possible to create a policy if we have no data, if we can't study anything? Mm-hmm. Most of studies are based on misleading data because we have no data. And we are talking about digitalization of our water management systems and we have no meter.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Very briefly, Otto. Yes.
Discussing implementation of legislation, I leave that to other more qualified colleagues. I also would like to point to implementation of solutions and what can be done there. Again, referencing the partnership we have with WWF and the co-funding of the Coca-Cola Foundation, we actually have invested 4.5 million in the Living Danube, which that has unlocked EU financing up to 20 million, right? So I think as we look into implementation and what needs to be done next, WWF brought forward a very interesting idea of a sponge facility that then actually can help unlock private sector funding, public funding, maybe investments or loans from the EIB. Mm-hmm. So again, it's a matter of implementing legislation, but also a matter of implementing and scaling up solutions and unlocking the finance needed to get us there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Wouter. I would like to move already to the first questions that I'm getting from the audience, not the least also because we have still a good half an hour of discussion, but Veronica Manfredi will have to leave us a bit earlier, so I would want to still address a couple of questions with her. So just as a reminder, you can use the QR code that will appear on your screens for Slido, or otherwise connect at slido.com and use the hashtag water to input your questions. And actually, the first question that I wanted to ask, and the one that has also been most voted so far, is for the European Commission. So Veronica Manfredi might be best positioned to answer. It's from Francesco Billi, and he asks, how does the Commission see the energy-water nexus influences in the EU's future plans of water? Is there any specific measures on this issue? So yeah, the energy-water nexus.
Well, actually, I have the honor to sit in this panel also with Pernilla Weiss, whom I recognize having been a fantastic driving force inside the European Parliament whenever discussing quite a number of key parts of the Fit for 55 to enhance this water energy nexus connection. But it's fair to say that we see it as really the next frontier. We have been trying in some of the legislative proposals for which we've been more directly in charge, notably my department, I think of the Urban Wastewater Treatment Directive, to really clarify how much it is important to secure that this water energy nexus drives the way in which we do the modernization of this entire wastewater treatment system. But it's just one example out of a much bigger scale of things. We cannot go hydrogen without understanding exactly what is the water bill behind. We cannot, so we are really clearly in the water strategy that the European Commission is working on. There is a lot of attention to the water bill behind the type of energy mixes that we want to have. Nuclear comes also with a lot of water consumption needs. But of course, there are possibilities to go for towards more circular use of water. And we always say at the same time, we are largely untapping the reuse potential of water across the European Union. I mean, there is an enormous amount that we could still untap whilst being mindful of the importance to go back, give back to our natural ecosystem system as well. Huh? So clearly one of the key topics in our mind when working on water resilience. Mm-hmm.
You were right to point out that indeed MEP-WISE is really at the intersection between the water and energy and environmental policies, really, and then the Fit for 55 across at the European Parliament. So maybe is there something that you would like to add to this question?
Definitely, I would like to say thank you. It's very kind, Manfredi. And Veronica, you know that you and I share a lot of values and dreams and hopes for the future. And it's a pleasure to be a part of the work that you do with your colleagues. So thank you for that. Now, I just wanted to say on this water energy nexus, because it's so really relevant to understand, but it's also strangely difficult to understand. And find out how the relationship really works. And there, a suggestion from my side, also coming from this morning's event that I had a couple of hours this morning on water, that when we talk about competitiveness in Europe, and thank God we do that again, although we still are a little bit stumbling on the narrative of what is actually competitiveness. It is strange that we still don't have a clear KIP for competitiveness that relates to water, or that we have, let me say it in another way, that we don't have a KPI on water that in very simple terms tell us the impact on water on our economy in terms of our competitiveness. Because if we did that, then maybe the water energy nexus will unfold much more easy for the relevant stakeholders, that if you cut down on your energy consumption, you need to work on your water consumption or your use of water. And by that, saving money, by doing that, implementing the newest technologies, and by that, making our competitiveness and our economic muscle grow, so that also our economy can get so strong that we can afford to do what we need to do, not to lose on biodiversity and the investments that we need to do in research areas that are not that really needs more funding and more time to mature. So a KPI on competitiveness that articulates the value of the energy water nexus. Please, I hope we could find out how that phrase could be.
Thank you very much. Andreas, you wanted to add something
just
to this?
Just to follow up on that, I mean, I think it helps sometimes to get a sense of how much this is worth economically. So last year, WEF put out a study that found that the value of freshwater and freshwater habitats is something worth about 11 trillion euros per year, which, if you try to put it into perspective, it's about 2.5 times the GDP of Germany. You know, so it's a substantial amount. And that's one trillion of that is direct use, so for the household use, also agriculture. But then the 10 trillion is really about other ecosystem benefits, whether it's flood management, purification of water, and so on and so forth, that is given by habitats. So maybe speaking some of that economic language can help us to also be more convincing and bring that ahead.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very much. Then I would like to move to the next question. It's coming from Tara Sukic, and she's asking, where do panelists see chances to prevent problems ahead of time instead of waiting for them to create urgent issues in relation to water privatization and or the lack of overall good ecological status on most of our rivers? So this is really a question on prevention and anticipation rather than reaction to these challenges. Who would like to take on this question?
If I may very briefly, I think everyone who uses water or touches water should have a water stewardship strategy where you demonstrate responsible use of what is ultimately, you know, a public good. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have set water usage ratio improvement goals by 2030 to use 20% less, and we're already using 10% less or making a progress on that efficiency. And then obviously to look into what I was saying before, into regenerative water use, right? And because water is a very context-specific issue, right? Mm-hmm. It's, you need to better understand, you know, the risks at watershed level. Mm-hmm. But I think every operator should actually develop mm-hmm. such a plan, and then collectively, you know, we will be much better prepared mm-hmm. to address those the shocks mm-hmm. ahead.
Thank you, Wouter. Since Veronica Manfredi needs to leave us in just under 5 minutes, there's a question that has just come for her, and I think it's an important one to respond, which is, I think we're getting a lot of questions on the issue of climate adaptation and how do we pay for it. And there's a question from Rick Meyer, which I'll be reading right now, which says, adequate finances are very important to deal with climate adaptation. Now we have finance possibilities under Horizon, Interreg, LIFE. Wouldn't it be better to have a separate climate adaptation facility in the next multi-annual financial framework? This is one of the questions that we have. There's a few questions more on, like, how do we pay for it in practice? What can you tell us?
The next multi-annual financial framework is in delicate stages of internal reflections and preparations. You know that there is a commission obligation to table the next one sometimes in the first half of 2025, so premature to say. Clearly, I expect climate in all its forms, mitigation, adaptation, to continue to be very much in our radar screen. But maybe what matters the most is also to think that how much public money we will be able to put, it will never, never be enough. Here we are talking about a topic that clearly needs an alliance between public and private operators. It's a topic where it's extremely important that indeed we also drive investment. And I'm happy also to report back, I didn't mention because the list of water relevant dealings of the European Commission this mandate is pretty long. Taxonomy will certainly help us. We have been very attentive to secure that also in the taxonomy we are clearly identifying a number of investments that would be very beneficial from an ecological restoration perspective, but general green water storage perspective. And this, I hope, will find, you know, interested partners like Coca-Cola that really we thank for championing, amongst other the Living Danube dimension. You have many other areas where we are grateful for you, the efforts that your corporation is doing. But all I want to say is really that we need to act in partnership, and we have to act on different levels together. I put a lot of bet on the capacities of companies to foresee, and actually there are also even legal requirements, not just industrial emission that I was mentioning before, but the non-financial disclosure requirement that are also nudging, in particular, the larger corporations to be more attentive to their environmental footprint. We are about to adopt also the Eco Design for Sustainable Products regulation, another very important work strand where through the integrated environmental footprint, you do take note also of the water consumption rate. So I think all these aspects give already a very positive nudge, and I count also very much on cities. Many of them are already today working in the name of either climate adaptation or general integrated water management perspective to assess better their water, their own local water needs. And I think that it is from cities and from companies that we can, first of all, please, colleague, stay firm on the trajectory ahead, which I think is the most important political message right now. And secondly, also map together the most important missing points. And I agree there with the statement also of Mrs. Weiss, governance, finance, investment, and continued research and innovation efforts, which are certainly indispensable.
Thank you very much to Veronica Manfredi. Thanks a lot for having joined us in this panel discussion.
But
if I can ask for a big round of applause for Ms. Manfredi.
Thank you, colleagues.
Right, we have just about 15 minutes to go in this discussion. So the question of climate adaptation has come, and I think I have still like some more questions around it. Nicolas is saying, I wonder how are we talking about how are we still talking about if we have to do something, and instead of how are we paying for it? So which solutions in terms of adaptation of our cities, of our industries, of our ecosystems should we prioritize? And yeah, how do we also funnel finance to it?
Let me jump in by saying a few keywords. First of all, there is no entry single entry point in order to map all the funds available on water. We have so many streams of flows of money financing private, public, but we have no clear idea about which is the complete, entire, the overall picture about that. This is the most important. For this reason, we called a Blue Transition Fund. Second, I fully agree, we fully agree, that we need to have a joint cooperation between public and private. But please, we have to be all aware, all of us be aware, that it is the round to for a privatization of water, sources of water. And we truly believe, we stress that water is a public good, strategic public good, and increasingly scarce. So this is the first point. But when we talk about also how to finance, how to push all actors in being more water resilient and sustainable, we have also to create new frameworks, financial, fiscal rules at any level, because it's not possible. I would like to give you one example. A few months ago, I've been close to Madrid. I visited a very large company, a paper mill company, who set a pilot project, 8 years pilot project, 8 years. At the 8th year, they achieved the result. All the water, paper mill, so a very huge water-consuming company and industry, they recycle the same water 13 times. The 20% of the water lost, evaporated, they buy from the treatment plant. It means that after 8 years, no fresh water is used nowadays. So it means that it's possible. When I asked them, you have a lot of plants across Europe. Why do not implement this procedure? Without price, without rules, why we should? So we need to be open-minded to understand which fiscal, financial, and legal framework we have to adopt.
Mm-hmm. So need the price and need the rules. And Andreas?
In a fair way.
Mm-hmm. You asked about climate adaptation. Not surprisingly, I will say work with nature, not against it. On the question of the financing, we certainly need more funds. Sponge Facility or the Sponge Fund, which Wouter mentioned, is one of the things that WF is calling for. But I think we also need to recognize, I mean, the kind of funding also that is needed across the Danube Basin. We've implemented at this point something like 40 wetland and river restoration projects so far. And the biggest, there's often what we found, and we've done analysis, we found that there's we can often get the money to actually implement these once we have a feasibility study and everything's ready to go. There's structural funds, there's various other kinds of funds. But the real difficult part is, I guess you could call it the venture capital, you know, the talking to all the landowners, lining all that up, getting the feasibility studies, the legal permissions, and so on. Wouter mentioned that we managed to leverage EU funding. I mean, the essential piece of that was the funding that we had from the Coca-Cola Foundation that allowed us to leverage that funding. Without that funding, we wouldn't have had that. You know, so we need to find Europe-wide, you know, some mechanism so that we're not just dependent on
on foundations, like the Coca-Cola Foundation. And then finally, just in terms of the private sector engagement, which was mentioned, you know, again, every single company is dependent on water, directly or indirectly. And one of the things that we're trying to do, and also with the help and the support of Coca-Cola, is to show that, you know, take companies on a journey of water to realize, you know, their own dependence from water, taking action within their own factory gates, then going on to their supply chains as well, but then realizing that that's not enough. That, you know, if we don't pull this together, we are in one watershed. We need to work together in order to be able to ensure that we have enough water in that watershed. So it comes to collective action, to working together, investing in nature-based solutions, but then also engaging in the political process, supporting the implementation of the Water Framework Directive, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Maybe Ms. Weiss, anything that you would like to add to this question?
Yeah, just a little bit. We could also ask for the answer on the question, what does it cost not to work on implementation of the relevant directives, etc.? So the cost of doing nothing, what is that compared to the return on investment by actively using the funds that are already available, both in private and public sector, and maybe use them a little bit more wisely by using life circle assessments in the approach. Life circle assessments of the prioritization on investments, I think we could do better in terms of that, because that could maybe boost the sexiness, so to speak, on infrastructure. Because infrastructure in energy and infrastructure in water sector is often something that we don't pay so much attention to, because it's under the ground, we don't see it. It's just costly, and there's nothing for politicians to celebrate about, and we can't see the investment that we made. But by using life circle analysis on small-scale ecosystem in sectors and regions and municipalities, then the, so to speak, sexiness of looking at numbers and seeing literally the return on investment by working much more actively by implementing the different tools and directives maybe would be a way forward. And also, as Piero De Rotto so very wisely said, the data. We need data to inform us that we are going in the right direction, but also to steer us in the right directions, that we use our economy in a way where we create a kind of a snowball effect. So where we have the best return on investments, we start by that, because then the economy will grow and we can fund the also needed investments, but where the return on investment is maybe a little bit more, I mean, not so big, but needed anyway.
Thanks a lot, MEP Weiss. Now, since we have a few minutes to go into this discussion, I would like to look also on the way forward and this, you know, additional tools that we need in our toolbox. So a question that I would like to ask all of you, the question of having a European a blue deal or a blue transition fund has already come up in the discussion. So I would like to pick up on that and say, how could this blue deal look like in practice? And how do we prevent them from being, you know, another siloed policy? Because I think the main concern that has come consistently is the fact that we are tackling all these different issues on silos. So How could it look like, and how do we make sure that it's part of an integrated policy landscape and toolbox? Maybe Wouter would like to get us started.
Very briefly to start this off, but I would encourage the Commission to use its convening power, right, to bring all stakeholders together and to start from, you know, a good discussion, reflecting on what is already in place and what are the asks from the stakeholder groups before we go into developing yet other frameworks, precisely to avoid that we go into this siloed landscape of different regulatory initiatives, but to ensure that we actually tap into you know, the progress that has been made in the private sector, in civil society, that we listen to regional governments and local governments. But I think what we have been missing to a certain extent under this mandate was actually sufficient stakeholder engagement, which goes beyond the usual impact assessments and the usual, you know, consultation processes, but real dialogue where people can come to the table, you know, with real life solutions, and then we reflect how we can collectively scale them up. So again, for the Commission, use your convening power as we embark on this very important journey to get more political attention to water. The starting point is build a not only as Ms. Manfredi said, you know, in terms of, you know, bringing society along, but also bringing the stakeholders along, and take the time to build that that collective understanding.
Thank you, Wouter. Andreas?
Yeah. So just as the in terms of the Blue Deal, I think it's been very useful in terms of raising the whole issue of water to political attention. That said, I think we basically have what we need right now. I mean, in terms of the Green Deal, we have, I mean, it emphasizes the Water Framework Directive and implementing that. We need this focus on nature-based solutions, on working with nature, not against it, is ultimately what we need. It can be certainly improved, you know, but so I wouldn't want a Blue Deal focused, you know, to replace some of these things that we have. The focus is there. We just need to implement it. We need that drive.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Pietro Zolotto?
Oh, okay. It's easy to speak about the necessity to have a Blue Deal. Again, we strongly believe that we need a standalone policy, because just a cross-cutting approach on water could be effective and useful. If we block it in a silo as a chapter, it will not work. Not work, because we'll be perceived as another constraint, another burden, another administrative, another constraints, another heavy activity, or limit for our activities. And not, I'm not talking for the households, but for farmers and from industries. More than 70% of water consumption in Europe. We have to have them on board and to work with them, because there we can work. We can find the common solutions in order to be effective. Otherwise, we are talking about something that will be perceived, and the protest of farmers that blocked a lot of initiative. Right or wrong, I'm not discussing about that. But the result is blocking the discussion and the process. Postponing. We hope Pernille and me and Committee of Regions signed the letter immediately after, 24 hours, 48 hours after a letter. But Vice President Marosefcovic said in our plenary the same day of the postponing decision to go beyond and to go the necessity to go ahead on water. But we need to be open, and having a cross-cutting approach, a foresight, with foresight.
I take this word, the question of foresight and anticipation. Yes, and Pernille Weiss for some final comments as well.
Just some keywords on why the Blue Deal. I don't mind if the baby gets another name, if there's a problem with that. But I like the Blue Deal, and I would like the Blue Deal to be about the deal, because what we didn't do very cleverly in the Green Deal was that we focused a lot on how to cut down CO2. That was very important, but we missed the deal part. So where are the tools? Where are the fundings? Where are the advice, the guidance on using the files? And we know that we can expect that there will be in the future very visible signs that there is a kind of asymmetry or maybe contra contra production between the Fit for 55 files that the Blue Deal could then adjust by addressing water as the binding glue that makes our ability to reach the climate goals by working on water much more predictable and much more safe. So a horizontal approach to the existing legal frameworks and tools would be wonderful to put into to the Blue Deal, and also to, as I said before, work a lot more on the investment side, that the Blue Deal also could articulate what can we win for the European society and our economy, that also makes it much more clear that we will also be able to do the investments in the future, both in terms of the green transition and the needed blue sustainable transition. So yes, that's the reason why we need a Blue Deal in the future. There is no green without the blue.
There is no green without the blue, indeed. That's, I think, one of the main messages that we can get out of this session today, which I'm afraid that is coming to an end. We could have addressed so many more questions still with our distinguished panelists, but I'm taking a few ideas with me. The question of anticipation and foresight, the question of putting more emphasis and focus on adaptation as well, and the different measures that we can undertake, and the need for financing for it, the need also of public and private collaboration across different actors and across also unlikely bedfellows, as we discussed earlier. But most importantly, the urgency to be tackling this question and to preserve, to restore and to enhance our water ecosystems, because already our societies and our economies are suffering the consequences of it. So thank you very much to our distinguished panelists for having joined us today. Thank you very much to the many of you who have joined us either in person or online. Please continue the conversation using the hashtag EA Debates Online, and see you at the next debate. Have a nice rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you. And for those of you